Welcome to the Seven Figure Practice with Gerda Muller, clinical psychologist and leading private practice success business coach and mentor to allied health professionals.
Hey everybody, Gerda Muller here, clinical psychologist and private practice success business coach and mentor. How are you guys going on this fabulous Friday afternoon? Abby, we are live. Just letting my PA in the other room know that we are live. So she's going to be sharing this live stream into my Facebook groups because I really want to share this message far and wide that I have to share with you guys today. I was within a couple of minds and thinking, oh, maybe I shouldn't share this on my public page because it's a bit of a controversial topic at times. But then I thought, hang on. That's what I do, right? I'm the one that speaks the truth, that says it how it is, and it would be out of integrity for me not to go live on my public page and really own my message that I have in this regard. Hey Brooklyn, how are you going? Hope you are enjoying Hawaii. I've been following your journey there. You seem to be having an amazing time. Here in Brisbane, it is gale force winds. It is reminding me just a tad bit of my hometown of Port Elizabeth, where I come from, because there you would have days where you almost can't walk. The wind is so bad, right? And like every second day, at least the wind is going off. And it's like gale force winds. Not really, not according to me, but apparently that's what they're saying, right? She's very, very windy, which is why I decided not to live stream outside today, but do it here from within my house. So it's going to be an interesting weekend. Of course, Cyclone Oma is somewhere up the coast and might be coming across on land. So there's a lot of unexpected things, but all that means to me really for now is that it's gonna be an indoorsy weekend. School sport has been canceled at our school. It's not happening. So it might be a weekend of pancakes and movies with the kids and stuff like that. So if you are joining us live, please follow Brooklyn's example and say hi, say hello, so that I can see who's actually here with me live, right? We'll do Brooklyn, and you enjoy the beauty that is Hawaii and all the shenanigans that you're getting up to there. So please say hi and say hello. So the topic of discussion for today is when your clients don't pay you, okay? Now, I am sure that this is probably, I'm just looking, making sure that I'm live here on my page. I know I am live, but I like to see it on my computer, right? It's like, yes, I'm there. I haven't been cut off by the internet. That's been a bit dodgy. So it says when your clients don't pay you. And I'm sure that this message could really be relevant not only to psychologists, not only to allied health professionals or health professionals in general, but to the majority of business owners out there, right? There's a reason there's companies called debt collectors, because this happens every day where people provide a service or even a product, right? But we are in the service business industry where people provide a service and then they don't get paid. And the reason why I decided to live stream on this afternoon is that this week I spoke to no less than four practice owners from around Australia who told me that they're having these difficulties at the moment, right? And then yesterday, one practice owner, lovely practice owner here nationally in Australia, put up a post in one of my Facebook groups that she's struggling with the exact same thing. So I was thinking, you know what, if five people are reaching out this week, there's probably 25, 250, I don't know how many, that's just not saying it, because I think to some extent that there could be a bit of shame attached to worrying about something like this or asking about something like this, right? Hey, Marianne, thanks for joining me. How are you going this lovely Friday afternoon? So I thought, you know, it tells me that people are struggling with this, right? And the theme that kept on coming up when I was speaking with these practice owners, and some of them are solo clinicians that I've been speaking to, was the sense of guilt that they have, right? Hey, gorgeous girl. Oh, thank you, Maren. This sense of guilt that they have when asking for the money once they've delivered the service. And it's really interesting because as a practice owner, a group practice owner myself, I love new graduates. So we often have brand new psychologists that come through our doors that are so eager to learn and to work. And not only even new graduates, I often find this with very experienced psychologists that maybe have been working at Queensland Mental Health or have been in a situation where they didn't take money for payment. And when they come to the practice and for some reason reception's not there, they need to take in the payment. It is an extremely confronting thing for them to do, right? So they might have had this session with a client, probably did really amazing work, have given so much value. They walk the client out to the front desk. Maybe reception is on a day sick, or maybe reception had to pop out to go do some banking or buy some stationery. And the responsibility is then on the clinician to put through payment, like, you know, ask for how would you like to pay for that, right? And so many of them would tell me afterwards how hard that was for them, right? How anxiety provoking it was, how bad they felt for asking the question. And then we spend some time processing that. So it is something that doesn't come naturally, especially to helping professionals, because I think at some level there's this inherent clash between wanting to help and wanting to be paid at the same time. It's like the helping, there's this, I don't know, there's almost this unconscious belief that if you want to get paid to help, you don't really want to help. Which is not true, right? It's not true. But I think there's this underlying assumption there almost that it's bad then to ask for the money, right? So it is definitely a topic that I've often had to process with new clinicians at the practice in their supervision. And it's something that they have had to go through the process of getting exposure in. Because it, of course, exposure works, right? After they've done it a couple of times, then they go, well, actually, I was fine. Actually, the client gladly paid for the service because they know that they got value from it. You know, they didn't bite my head off. They didn't get upset. They didn't go, what you're on about. They just took out their card and they paid, right? So 9 out of 10 times, it goes very smoothly like that. So, you know, if you're a new clinician, new to maybe solo private practice, new to group private practice, know that there might be some uncomfortableness at the start. Know that that's probably normal, but know that it's also okay to ask to get paid, right? Very important to know that. And the thing that I always think about is, you know, would people go to Woolies and buy products and say, I don't want to pay today, or I want to pay you next week? No, they don't, right? I also try and help my people, you know, put themselves in another situation. If you think about a neurosurgeon, right? If I needed neurosurgery because, you know, and if I don't have it, I might die, and I don't want to go through the public health because there might be a long, long wait list, and I want to go to a private surgeon, that surgeon isn't going to operate unless they get paid, right? So how come should it be different to us who's also helping people? It is really, really important if you struggle with this concept to speak this out in your own supervision with your clinical supervisor, or to speak this out with a colleague or a peer during peer supervision, or maybe even to speak this out with your own counselor, with your own psychologist, because this might be embedded in childhood beliefs about money, about making money, about asking for money, about having money, right? And those things then start to come out when, as an adult, we go into business, right? And I wonder sometimes whether it's part of why a lot of people don't want to go into private practice, because they don't like that part of it. They don't like the business acumen and skills required that comes with it. But really, in actual fact, as long as you remind yourself that you're running a business, it's not that hard, right? Because it is a business. And I think it's really important for us to remember, hey, Rachel, how are you? To remember that we as helping professionals in private practice, we are not government, right? And we often expect ourselves to fill the gap left by public mental health, left by NGOs, because we all know it, that the public mental health will only take a certain amount of patients that they can take because they're short of resources, right? Although there's millions of dollars of funding that goes into it, they're still short of resources. And then I can't fathom how half their people, when you work at Queenstown Health, you might see 3 clients a day, right? It's like, and you call yourself a psychologist, you see 3 clients a day. That's not being a psychologist, and you're there for 8 hours. Don't go off topic, Gerda. But the fact of the matter is, they can only take on so many clients. NGOs, not-for-profits, they have funding, they can only take on so many clients. And very often, what I know to be true, because I've felt it, my clinicians feel it, my practice owners from around Australia feels it, they have almost a sense of responsibility to fill the gap, right? So our role as private practice is to support people that can pay for their mental health, right? To support people that can go, yes, I'm happy to pay the $180, $200, however much ever it is, so that I can get better, so that I can improve my mental health and therefore function better and live the life that I deserve, right? But there's this big group of people that are slipping through the cracks, and as a result, I find that it's very often the private practice business owner, small business owner, very often these are solo practitioners just working for themselves out of a room that then are the ones to say, yes, I will bulk bill you, or yes, I will do pro bono sessions. And those clinicians are really, really struggling, right, financially to feed their own families. So from on a macro perspective, I see these trends going on, right? And then the government releases funding and then it doesn't go to private practice, right? It goes to organizations that's got all these huge overheads, and it goes to structures and admin stuff. And then I'm going, oh my goodness, they should just give that money to private practice, right? Because we know how to run a business. We will be able to help double the amount of people that a lot of those other organizations that get it help, because we know how to run a business on a shoestring budget. Okay, why? Because we're passionate about helping people. We're passionate about filling the gaps that's left within the services. But we also know that we need to pay our bills, right? Hey, Sarah, how are you going? So again, that's a bit of a tangent, right? I wanted to, because these things have been bothering me of late when I look at it at this macro perspective, at the pressures that's being put on private practice as a result, right? If you ask me, I think the government should be, giving rebates for people to see their psychologist, to see their mental health social worker or whatever, allied health professional. But, you know, I mostly speak about psychologists because that's my experience. That is my profession, to have as many sessions as they want. Yes, you want to limit it, right? But some people might need 40 sessions a year to see their psychologist. Other people are only going to need 4, right? Other people are going to need 14 or 24. Why have the same limit when people have got different presenting problems, right? And if the government is really serious about, supporting people, they will increase the rebate as well, right? So people can be out of pocket less, because what we need to charge as business owners will remain the same, right? Because we need to cover our expenses. And it's really, the Medicare rebate is not about paying the psychologist. The Medicare rebate is a support for the client. So the client can go, yes, this week, when I go through all of my expenses, you know, groceries, and all this other stuff, rates, taxes, whatever, food, electricity, all of those things, that there's going to be enough money over for me to pay to see the psychologist that's going to help me or a member of my family, and that when I get that rebate, I'm still going to have money to get me to the end of the week, right? That is for the client. Now, that all being said, as a service provider, you as a clinician are still a person, okay? You are still a business owner. You've got team members. You've got admin staff that you need to pay, right? You've got clinicians that you need to pay, which means that you need to be okay, or you need to get okay with asking for the money, all right? And asking for it at the time of consultation. That is how service businesses work 99% of the time. This is how I suggest you run your private practice when you are a small business owner. You know, if I go down to my local fish and chip shop that is owned by a local family in our area, I'm gonna pay them when I take the food, right? I'm not gonna tell them I'll deposit it into your bank account next week or in 2 weeks time, or I'm not gonna tell them please invoice me for the fish and chips, right? Because to be honest, I'm not gonna be very motivated to pay for it come next week Wednesday, right? I've eaten it, it's gone. So it would be really silly for them not to ask me for payment right at that time, right? And it's the same for us. You want to make it easy for people to pay you, right? You don't want to set your client up. You don't want to set yourself up for a difficult situation that could potentially occur, which means that you need to ask for the money at the time of consultation, right? And you need to do that over and over and over, and then you will get used to being okay with that because you deserve to get paid, right? As a business owner, I need to make sure that admin asks clients to pay for their sessions, because unless the client pays for the service that we are rendered, we're not government, we're not NGOs, we don't get funding, right? That money needs to pay our overheads and our bills, and I need to use that money to pay my admin team, and I need to use that money to pay my clinicians for the amazing work that they do. And if I'm not able to do that, we need to close our doors. It's as simple as that, right? And then the hundreds and hundreds of people that come through our doors every week aren't gonna get the help that they deserve, right? And that they need. So I've got a ethical, moral, fiscal responsibility to make sure that my people get paid and therefore to ask for the money. And also remember, if you're not doing it, you should be doing this, right? That it's okay to ask for it, because before people book in, when they're on the phone and they call up and they say, oh, my doctor has recommended that I come and see you, or, you know, my friend has recommended that we come and see you because they've been with you, you quote your fee over the phone, right? You have to quote your fee. You don't just book people in, okay? So if you're not doing that, that's on you. You need to make sure that you are clear with people so that they can say, yes, I'm happy with that. I'm happy to pay $180. I'm happy with the $84 Medicare rebate that I'm gonna be getting. Yes, I understand it. You need to make sure your team is trained to give that information, to get the yes from the client that yes, they're happy with it before you book them in, right? And then what we do at our practice, we then also send the client a welcome letter. Like it's really an email, it's not an official letter, it's old school letter now in an email that reiterates the information that we've just given them on the phone, which means that clients know what the service costs, right? And that I see that as our responsibility as a business. Even if the client doesn't ask how much it is, I'm not gonna assume that they know, because they're probably gonna assume that we're a bulk billing practice and we're not, right? So I'm gonna make sure and I ensure that my team knows that the client knows what's involved so that they aren't in an embarrassing situation when they come to the front desk and we ask them to pay, right? I don't want that for my clients and I don't want that for the team as well. So if you have not been doing these things and you do have clients that have racked up a bill, I would strongly suggest that you cease service until that bill has been paid, right? And that's standard practice for any type of business, right? Hey, Suzanne. Suzanne says, we will see four clients to a large NGO's one. Exactly, Suzanne, exactly. It just like boggles my mind that the government will keep on putting funding into organizations that can't run systems effectively. And then this, and I'm not sure it's the government, is the community that think because we're private business that we're just gonna line our own pockets, and it's not the case. We wouldn't have this problem of asking to get paid if we were like that, right? And anyway, when you get government funding, there should be lots of checks and balances in place to make sure it's used well. And I think the best person to use that is a private practice owner, because we know how to run a practice on a very limited budget, right? And still do amazing, amazing work. So what I was saying is that if you do have clients that have, have a lot of outstanding accounts, you really need to set a process in place of following that up. And that would include not engaging in further sessions until such time as that has been paid, right? And I do know that is a really scary thing for a clinician, especially if you're a solo practitioner. It's much easier for me as a practice owner to tell my reception and to tell my clinician through instruction and saying, do not rebook this client because they owe us $600. So we need to get paid before we allow them to incur additional debt. Now, you might or may not know this, but ethically, as a psychologist, we should not be allowing clients to rack up debt. Okay, that is not right. So a lot of people go, oh, is it not unethical to see sessions? Well, it's actually unethical more so to allow them to incur debt that's going to lead to stress and anxiety because they can't pay it, right? It really, in that situation, it's what's the worst of two evils, right? So you need to have that conversation with them. You need to tell them what's going on, maybe come up with a plan with them. But ethically, you shouldn't be allowing them to come in because all that's going to do is add more anxiety and stress to them, right? It's going to add another zero potentially even to the debt that they owe you, and you can't allow that to happen. So you need to have a process and steps in place. And I know one of the people that has raised this issue said that, you know, but what if the client reports me and makes a complaint because I'm no longer giving them service, or the client can say you're abandoning me, stuff like that. That could happen because people sometimes when they don't know what else to do and they are angry and upset, they might make complaints like that. But that should not stop you from doing what is right ethically and from a business perspective, right? Ethically, you can't allow clients to continue to incur debt. You can't do that. And from a business and fiscal perspective, you've got a fiscal and moral responsibility towards the people that you employ to ensure that your clients pay in order for you to be able to pay their wages, because you have a legal responsibility to pay them, right? You can't get away from that. It's like a bit of a domino effect that happens when you're in the service business. And I would encourage you not to be scared of that, okay? Complaints get made every day. There's a reason why the system is in place, right? And we live in a first world country. And I think the health ombudsman or UPRA or whomever the complaint is made to, you know, they're not idiots, okay? Yes, as a general rule, they might, you know, be there to some extent to advocate for the consumer, but they're still not idiots, and they know that sometimes people make vexatious complaints. And all you need to do as a practice owner is be honest, authentic, and in integrity as to what happened and how you got to the decision that you made, right? It is really important as a business owner that you do not make decisions based on fear. And if you are not gonna ensure that you get paid, if you are not gonna, you know, cease treatment and stop a client from incurring debt until they've paid off the outstanding amount, that's not doing the right thing, okay? And that's gonna be fear-based decision-making. You cannot run a business when it's fear-based, right? You need to have faith that what you're doing is the right thing, which means that you need to think it through. You need to think about the ethics. You need to think about your fiscal responsibility as a business owner, which the Australian government, by the way, expects you to have, because you're not allowed to trade insolvent, right? I think people forget, as a business owner, how many people you need to keep flipping happy, right? And with how many people could potentially get upset with you. The client can get upset, your employees can get upset, your subcontractors can get upset, the government can get upset, you know, APRA can get upset. There's so many people that you can upset. If you're gonna live in fear, you're not gonna be able to do this thing called private practice or any business for that matter, right? Because the same holds true for any other type of business. which means that you need to have faith in your own decision making, and you need to go, okay, I've checked the ethics, I've checked my legal and fiscal responsibilities, and based on this, this is the decision that I'm making, right? And you need to make the decision which is in the best interest of most people involved, right? And whether and if that still leads to a complaint, that is perfectly fine, right? That person has the right to complain and you have the right to defend yourself. Do not be scared of it, okay? Do not be scared. They're not going to take your registration away because one person complained. From what I've gathered, you need to be pretty bad to be deregistered. You need to be like really fucked up to be deregistered in this country, right? And I'm not saying that means that you can do bad things. You should not. You are not allowed to. You need to follow the rules. But even though we follow the rules, other people might not like it, right? If somebody doesn't like the fact that you are following the rules, the ethics and the fiscal rules and the legal responsibility that you have as a business owner, if they don't like it, that's okay, right? Doesn't make you wrong. If they don't like it, they can complain, right? Doesn't make you wrong. You just need to sit through that anxiety of, oh my God, I'm being reported. And when the time comes, you just state your case and you will be perfectly fine. Okay? You need to trust in that. You cannot live your life in fear. You cannot run a business in fear. You know, I once was actually, when I was still doing a lot of client work, PTSD work, I was subpoenaed, lawyers requested information from me, right? So this was a client I was seeing. Their lawyers, not opposing lawyers, their lawyers requested information from me. And I'm not going to give too much information away here because this is a public live stream, but I basically refused to release that information. The client knew why I was making that decision. The lawyers reported me to the privacy commissioner, and I was still pretty new in the country. I was, oh my goodness, I don't have citizenship yet. What if they kick me out of the country? So I get it, right? That is the type of catastrophic thinking that you engage in, because generally as a helping professional, we are people that want to do the right thing. We are a values-based profession, right? And when somebody tells us we're doing the wrong thing, we want to back down. We want to back off, right? And that's not a good thing in our industry. It's why people just write off debt. It's why a lot of practice owners let their subcontractors just walk over them. It's why a lot of employees just let the practice owners walk all over them, right? It depends on the situation, because we hate being accused of doing the wrong thing, because we're so scared of what is that going to mean, right? And then you have to work so hard to get your qualifications. What if somebody takes this stuff away from you, which is your dream and your passion, right? I so get this. But coming back to my story is that they reported me to the privacy commissioner. I was freaking the hell out being a new psychologist in this country. So we're talking quite a number of years ago now, right? And I had the booked in conversation with this person, and I just told them the basis of my decision. And it was like a 20-minute phone call. And at the end of it, they said, thank you so much for your time, Mrs. Muller. You've got nothing to worry about. And we want to, you know, applaud you for the decision that you have made, because it was the absolute right decision. Okay? And that is because I reflected on what is in the best interest here. I did it. Although it could be seen, it was seen by the lawyers as against the law, against the Privacy Act. That's what they were saying. And you know, when lawyers tell you that you are breaking the law and they're reporting you, that is flippant scary, right? But I always go, I might not be a lawyer, but I research things, right? So I know what the Privacy Act is all about, because that's my industry. I might know all the other laws, but I've made sure that I know what's going on here, right? So although you might be the lawyer, I'm gonna stand in my truth and in my belief of what I know is best for the client. And in this situation, keeping everything into consideration, if that means I land in some type of trouble, then I'm gonna own that, right? And if I'm wrong, I'm gonna apologize. Okay, and I'm gonna I'm apologize, I'm going to learn from it. We all make mistakes. So you also can't be scared of making mistakes when it comes to that. Yes, you might be thinking, you know, some mistakes got bigger consequences than others. But again, you need to be like really bad in your behavior to be deregistered. And I think very often we are very scared of these organizations where really part of their job is to also educate, right? Educate the consumer and educate us as providers. So if I was in the wrong, their job will be to educate me and say, well, actually, this is how it works. This is what you need to do next time. How are you going to remedy your policies and your processes and stuff internally in order for this not to happen again? And, you know, awesome, thank you. You know, because if I'm doing the wrong thing, then I want to know how to correct it. And that's part of their role, right? It's not always punitive, but it will be punitive if you do the same thing over and over, the wrong thing. It will be punitive if it is really a significant contravention of ethical codes, of laws, and all of that type of stuff. Hey, Melissa. Rachel says, I refuse to operate out of fear these days. Fabulous. Rachel says she agrees 100%. I'm so happy to hear that. Sarah says, I'm getting better with it thanks to your pep talks. Have to go now. We'll watch the rest later. No worries. So glad to have had you on here. So what it is that I've actually done, that I've a little something I've prepared earlier, because I know people always ask me for these, is... let's say you are doing debt collection, right? So I'm very fortunate in my practice that I have somebody that does it, right? So I don't do it, my clinicians don't do it. And I realize that if you are a solo practitioner, you are probably wearing all the hats in your practice, right? So that's why I wanted to share this with you, because you could use this potentially. As a group private practice owner, I really appreciate and love having a designated person in our admin team that does the debt collection, because to some extent it really protects that therapeutic relationship between the client and the clinician, right? Because there's no reason why an outstanding debt needs to stop you from coming in for your session. All that needs to happen is we need to pay it off. You know, that's it. We're not saying you're a bad person. We're not saying we were bad. We're just saying this is what is there at the moment. Let's sort this out. Let's get it paid so that we can continue your sessions, right? So what I've done is I've just typed out 1, 2, 3 sentences here that you could potentially use as a script, especially if you are a solo practitioner. This is also a script that you could give to your admin, your practice manager, or whomever does the debt collection in your practice. So these are basic responses that you can give to clients if the client is getting upset, or they're getting angry, or they're getting reactive to the conversation, which could potentially happen, right? So the first sentence is, what you can say is, as you can understand, we can't keep our doors open without being paid for services rendered. So we would very much appreciate your support with insert, let's say if it was work cover or an insurance company, because a lot of times this is third party work, right? Or it can be an EAP company, in order for us to continue the important work of supporting you during this time. So that could be one for third party, let's put it in here, for third party referrals. Just gonna specify that, referrals. Okay, because a lot of the times, if it is a third party that's paying, it's not up to the client, right? And sometimes it happens that third party, even large organizations, just don't pay us. Even though the payment terms are like 30 days, they will take 60, 90, 120 days, which is huge on the cash flow of a small business, right? So yes, some people might go, oh, so you're gonna penalize the client because the organization is not paying. And that's not what it's about, right? The organization has to pay. If we've gone through the steps of getting money from them, we're now going to call in the client, right? Because this party is paying on behalf of the client these sessions. And this party, the organization, is they are the ones stopping the client from having continued services because they're not paying, okay? And again, you need to pay for services rendered. So it's their choice not to pay for whatever reason, their excuses. They can't expect us, a small business, to cover that, right? So we will then call in the client through the first one that says for third-party referrals and get their support and get them on board. The second response is the following. It says, and I will post it in now for you, as a business, we can't expect our clinicians to work for free. We need to ensure that they're looked after and compensated for the work they do. Okay, so that could be if a client objects when you are asking them to pay. Another response could be, as a business, our hands are tied if, and again, if this comes to another external provider, refuses to stick to the payment arrangements. We have done X, Y, and Z to secure the payment, but to no avail, and hence would appreciate your voice of support in order to continue supporting you during this time. So that is also for a third party referral. Because these actually happen pretty often. And this is for, this one will be for a private pay client, the middle one, private pay client, including Medicare. Okay. So I'm going to put that in there for you as a little comment. Hey, Laura. Hey, Kim. You guys have missed most of the live stream. I'm always finished. But be sure to listen to the whole one because I'm sure you'll appreciate it. So that is just some scripts that you can use and that you can, if you're a solo practitioner, or that you can give to your team that does the debt collection in your practice. So for those that have been following me, let me know if you've got any other thoughts or comments for your, those that have been live here. Laura says, I'll catch up later. Fabulous, Laura. Awesome. Let me just refresh the page to make sure I haven't missed any comments whilst that is loading. Just a reminder, guys, that my 6-month mentoring and coaching program called Ignite Your Practice is open right now for enrollment. This is an amazing, amazing mentoring program. If you really want to up level your practice over the next 6 months, there's so many inclusions that too many to mention here. If you're interested, please private message me here on Facebook or send me an email to gerda@private-practice-success.com. And I can send you all the information. So it's 6 months. It's really targeted towards your goals for your practice. Of course, I'm gonna get my hands dirty in your practice as well. We start off with a diagnostic assessment, as I like to call it, and a pre-intervention assessment of your practice, and really get the benchmark of where you are at now. Then we're going to set your goals for the next 6 months. Of course, I'm going to make sure that it's in line with the 7 secrets of private practice success, and then we're going to look at it again in 6 months' time so we can ensure that you are moving forward, right? And you get so many extra inclusions, as I say, too many to mention here. Send me a message and I'll let you know what's involved, but I'm only taking 10 clients into that group. It's going to be a very cohesive small group, and because I'm going to be involved a lot, I need to make sure that I have capacity to support you as much as possible, and places are filling every day now. So please, if you were interested, do not wait until the 1st of March when it kicks off. Let me know today. Hey Tanya, hey Tess, you guys are just coming in at the tail end of my live stream because I need to run now and collect some kids at school and probably sort an early dinner, seeing I've been telling my husband that normally Friday nights we get takeaways, right? It's like a little treat for the week. But I'm feeling really bad to get people to come and deliver food when there's gale force winds. What if they have an accident because they're wanting to deliver my food? So I told my husband, I think on the way to school pickup, we're gonna go get something so that we can make dinner tonight. So tonight we're making dinner, potentially. Laura says, my son loves your videos. Oh, I am so glad to hear that. Tess says, fashion new blade. Of course, Tess, that's how VIPs roll, not so. All right, I'm going to have to go. There's no other comments on the actual live stream subject. However, if you are watching the replay, please continue to have this conversation with me. I will most definitely be checking in on this conversation over the weekend as we are probably all going to spend some time on social media seeing that the weather's so bad outside. Whatever else you're doing on this day, have a fantastic day, have a fantastic weekend. And remember, as always, all you need to do is say yes to your very own ultimate level 5 private practice. And I'll speak to you again very soon. Bye for now.